Hey everybody, welcome back to Negro Please Radio. I'm your host, Chris Allen. How's everybody doing? Glad to be back. Off the top, as always, I want to take the time out to thank each and every last one of you guys for tuning in. So please tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell an enemy, tell somebody, help me grow this thing. Oh man, it's been a great week, everybody. We just did a great show last night at the Ante Room here in Charlottesville. We did Host Battle. I believe this is the fifth show we've done with Host Battle. And the crowds just keep getting better and better. So shout out to my co-host, Winston Hodges, for basically coming up with the idea for the show at the last minute a month and a half ago. And I was a little hesitant, but it really worked out. And it's getting better. Each time we do the show, we're learning all these little little nuances and timing things to make the show better. So, yeah, shout out to everyone who came out to the show last night. I mean, the crowds are just getting bigger and bigger. And that's all relative. You know, we're obviously not famous dudes, man. But having the 35, 40 people come out and they all sit up front and they're all involved. And it's just a great show. So yeah, we'll be back there October 21st. I believe that's a Saturday. So hopefully with it being a weekend, we can get even more people to come out and enjoy that show. So, yep. Host Battle. If you're in Charlottesville, check it out. Host Battle, man. It's a fun show. But, I'm going to open up the show as I normally do with my milestone. And for those who don't know, I have a 5-year-old little boy. And every week I like to kind of note something that he's into or what he's doing at the time. And I call it a milestone. So he's in the full swing of things now with kindergarten. He really likes it. And they actually said he could skip and go to first grade. But we decided just to let him mature and stay there. But his thing now is he likes to be called... Well, he refers to himself as Mr. Jones. So, like the other day, he was supposed to be taking a bath. And I'm like, hey, man, you got to stop talking. Get in the tub. And then he was like, okay. And then he got distracted. And I'm like, Miles, didn't I tell you to get in the tub? He was like, don't you mean Mr. Jones? And I was like, no, Miles, get in the tub. But he likes to pretend that he's a teacher. Well, in his mind, he is a teacher, and said he teaches speech, math, science, numbers, colors. So, and I've noticed that too, man. When he was at the age where you thought he would do a lot more imaginative play, he really wasn't, and now he's starting to do a lot more. It just took him a while to get on board with that, and that really concerned teachers. But I mean, now he's really. He's got a crazy imagination, but before, man, he just wanted to soak up numbers, letters, and, I mean, he's reading already, and he's in kindergarten, so he's definitely way ahead, and he's enjoying it, and I'm glad to see him in an environment where he's happy to learn. He's got good teachers. He has a good school. They do STEM there at his new school, and I'm just glad that he's a kid who enjoys learning and literally can't wait to go every day. I mean, there's times where he's up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, like, is it time to go to school? And we got to put him back in the bed. We're like, dude, you got 4 hours before you have to be there. So let's go back to sleep. So that's my milestone. Mr. Jones, that's his new name, everybody. So if you see Miles, call him Mr. Jones. So a few months ago, I get a text from a friend of mine. And he asked me if I wanted to open for Colin Quinn. Some things happened and someone else couldn't do it. And I'm like, hell yeah. So, and I don't mind being a second choice. That's fine. I'll take it. So I was super excited. It was one of those weekends where you're afraid it's going to get canceled. Because when you have people like Colin Quinn and comics of that caliber, they've got so much going on. You're always afraid that something's going to happen. You know, like they're going to get calls for a a bigger gig or a movie or something like that, or and they'll end up canceling on you. So I was nervous. I was like, I hope this thing happens. I hope it doesn't fall through. I hope they don't find somebody to replace me. I hope he doesn't, you know, decide to bring somebody at the last minute because I really want to do this gig. So I sat around excited and kind of sitting on pins and needles for weeks, just, you know, hoping that the gig happened. And last week happened. So none of the aforementioned things happened. He didn't bring anybody. They didn't find anybody else. He didn't cancel. So I got to work with one of the greatest comics, man. I think he's like in the top 40 comics of all time, according to Comedy Central's list, which is an impressive feat. And I know that list can be subjective and all that kind of stuff, but still, he's one of the best comics to ever do it. To work with this dude was insane. So he's kind of a rough New York guy, you know, born in Brooklyn. So and he even has that stereotypical kind of gruff New York voice with the accent. And I was like, man, this dude's probably going to be so mean. And because I hear stories about other comics who are, you know, in his class, so to speak, that aren't very nice to people. And I was like, oh, I hope he's not like that, man. I was just terrified. But the comics that I do know that have worked with him before, or they can see him on a regular basis, they go, dude, he's one of the nicest guys ever. And you're going to have a great time. And sure enough, you know, last Thursday rolls around. Get to the venue about 7 o'clock, and I run into Vinnie Paulino and Jimmy LaChase and Todd Youngman. Those are my Rochester comedian friends, and we're all sitting in the green room just anticipating the arrival of Mr. Quinn. So we're all back there, you know, and this is my first time working the club, so it's my first time in the green room. I'm meeting the kitchen staff and the wait staff and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, looking out into the room and talking about how great the place is. And he shows up, he walks in, and we all introduce ourselves, and he is just, I mean, one of the coolest dudes ever. You know, he just introduces himself just like any other comic would, and it wasn't this thing where you guys should know who I am type thing. He just introduced himself, and I mean, sat down immediately on the couch, popped a Diet Coke, and proceeded to just bust balls. I mean, within 5 minutes, we were just laughing, quoting Goodfellas and Casino. I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm into. I mean, I grew up in the Northeast. I have a shit ton of Italian friends, and that was just a very kind of New York thing, man. It's just like, when those movies came out, I was like 10, 12 years old, and those are the movies we shouldn't have been watching. But at that age, as a young boy, I mean, Goodfellas and Casino are like the shit. I have a lot of Italian friends, so it was just great, great time. And then to be able to do this with Colin Quinn, we're laughing about the painting scene from Goodfellas, and I mean, just quoting these lines. It was just fun, man. It couldn't have been a better introduction. And I know some people are like, "What the fuck does that even mean?" But it was a special moment, and it was just like, "Oh, okay, yeah." Now I'm so glad I've watched Goodfellas and Casino for 50 times a piece over the last, 25 years. So, that was a special, special moment. And for it to be like right off the bat. So it just made me really comfortable. I was like, oh, I like this guy. I like this dude. He likes to talk about the same shit I talk about when I go back and laugh at my friends. So the first show was great. Had a good set, you know, and I wasn't nervous. I've been doing this long enough to where I'm really past the point of like hoping that a comic that I want to work with sees my set, you know, because I would say 70% of headliners probably don't watch. If they do, it's usually a Thursday or a Sunday, and out of that bunch, most of them don't ever comment on your act or what you're doing, or, you know. So it's just people get wrapped up in their own thing. They have their own routines, and I'm not saying they're good or bad, but Most just don't watch. They just got other shit going on. So again, you've been doing it long enough to where you've heard it all, you know. So, but I, to my surprise, man, I'm on stage and I look over to my left, and in the corner seat, man, Colin Quinn is just sitting there watching, and I'm like, holy shit, you know, I don't want to mess this up. And I had a good set, you know. I think I got a couple chuckles out of him, and I come off. He goes, "Hey, man, you're real funny, man. Good stuff." And he goes up and he kills, and after the show, he's just, you know, he comes back in the green room, and I go, "Oh, man, you had a great set." He's like, "Oh, you had some good stuff there." And he actually quoted a couple jokes, like, "Hey, I really like this joke. I really like that joke." And it just felt good to get the head nod from someone who's been doing it for so long in New York. I mean, he's like the king of the comedy cellar. I mean, for that guy to see, you know, the greatest comics working right now, basically every night of the week down there, and then tell me that I have great jokes, really meant a lot. And definitely a confidence booster. And yet another one of these kind of like waypoint arrows, if you will, that kind of lets you know, like, all right, you're on the right path. And again, me being the maniac that I am, I overanalyze it. I'm like, you know what? He's just being nice. He's just saying it. But then again, I'm like, well, you know what? Even if he is, he said it, just use it to make yourself feel better and get up there and have good sets. So I'm getting a text from my wife. I got to pause. I'm pretty sure she's like, you're being way too loud. All right, I'm back. So that felt great to have him tell me that. And then so we kind of chit-chat after the show. It was only one show, so we were done pretty early. We kind of chit-chat back and forth. And I was like, yeah, so if you want to, you know, we talk about where he was staying and all this kind of stuff and what he was going to be doing here in Rochester. And I was like, hey, if you want to have breakfast or lunch, just, you know, hit me up on Twitter or whatever. And so I follow him on Twitter, and I wake up to a text message from CQ, like, hey, I'm up. What do you want to do? You want to grab breakfast? And I'm like, super excited. I couldn't even, because he told me, he was like, yeah, I'll hit you up, man. We'll go have breakfast. So I like make sure I got all my notifications turned on my phone, because most of us now, it's just your phone's on vibrate, notifications off. You're like, whatever. I'll get to it when I get to it. But when Colin Quinn's like, I'll hit you up in the morning, I mean, volume's all the way up, all the notifications on. Now, I feel like Miles. I wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning just anticipating hanging out with Colin Quinn. So, and sure enough, around, I want to say around 8 o'clock or so, he's like, hey, I'm up. Let's go get breakfast. So, I like hop out of bed, throw on some stuff, brush my teeth, run out the door, meet him at the hotel. I thought he might want to go somewhere like, you know, around town, but there happened to be a pretty nice little coffee shop around the street from his hotel. So we walked over there, and here I am, you know, walking down the street with old Colin Quinn. And I pick him when I get there. We hop in the car, actually, and he's like, so where do you want to go? And we finally get to the point where he's like, let's just go to this place over here. I'm like, cool. But I had Al Green playing, and he's like, oh, Al Green's the best. And he told me the story about his aunt who loved Al Green, and it was just, it's just weird, man. So I'm talking about Al Green and my Prius with Colin Quinn. So we get to the coffee shop, and for the next 2.5-3 hours, I get a chance to sit with, I mean, tough crowd, Colin Quinn. He's asking about, you know, my background, and he's, you know, he's talking about growing up in New York as a kid, and back in the 60s, and how we got into comedy, and we just kind of get to know each other's background a little bit more. And then we talk Patrice O'Neal, you know, to an extent I never thought I would ever have with someone that actually knew him. We talked about him, Nick DiPaolo. We talked about I don't want to call it a movement, but I don't know how much of a comedy fan you guys are, but there's like this thing of applause break comedy where you got quite a few comics who are, they're good, they're very popular, they're doing well in business, way better than I am. But it's just like a lot of shit they say really isn't funny. It's just matter-of-factly social commentary type stuff where they make a lot of good points. And I mean, their audience really loves it. And they come up with some clever stuff to say about, you know, white supremacy or racism or, you know, or Trump or Republicans. But it's just like there's no jokes in it. It's just, and we talked about that, you know, we talked about like, you know, that's great, but where's the jokes? Because he's a real socially aware guy who, you know, he likes history and he's a real people watcher. And it, you can really see it in his comedy way. He just breaks down the simplest human interactions and the implications of like what that small interaction with that person really says about them or that its impact in society. And it's really funny the way his mind thinks. And I think that's from being a New Yorker. You just kind of get cynical and you've seen just so many little things, so many little fights on the subway or just so many different people, so many interactions. I mean, growing up in New York where you got people trying to shove mixtapes down your throat. I mean, how to see people just get hustled on the street, you kind of get cynical and you learn how to like just break a person down. Like, I know that guy. I've seen this guy several times, you know, and you get so good at it. I mean, and you can be wrong, but you get so good at it. All it takes is for you can watch one interaction with a person to go, oh, he's that guy. In that situation. Oh, yeah, I know him. He's the type of guy that would do this. And it's fun. It's funny listening to him tell stories and just, I mean, so. Yeah, man, I couldn't believe it. Just 2-3 hours of me and him, we're just in the shop. We're talking SNL. We're talking writing, how he comes up with his jokes. And, you know, like, hey, you got to start listening to your sets. He was like, you know, listen to your sets on the way to the show. He's like, I know a lot of people want to listen to music. He's like, you're about to go on. He's like, listen to some sets. That way it's fresh in your mind. You go, oh, I can add this. I can take this out. He's like, listen to music on the way back. Listen to music on the way back. It's over. You can relax. And then, yeah, he's like, you don't have to do it immediately. But you're definitely on your way back, you know, relax. The show's over. He's like, if anything, listen to it before you go on. And that's something that I really need to start doing. He said recording yourself is very important. And I know this might sound very generic, but advice. But he was seeming to be really passionate about it because he was like, I don't. He's like, even I don't do it as much as I should. He said when he was doing the Broadway shows that he would listen every single day, every day, to the point where he was sick of it. But he's like, it just made the show better and better. I was doing it so much. I wanted to make it better at each showing. He's like, that's what I had to do. I know some people are probably wondering, like, did he trash anybody, anybody you thought he was cool with? And he's really not that type of guy. We did talk about how we talked about fame and success. And he was just saying how fame and success has never made anyone a better person. You know, he's just like, you are who you are. And just when you get that level of fame or success, it just really exaggerates and your true colors come out. And we did talk about comics in general, where you hear about these guys having these weird, what they call writers. And that's basically like, for lack of a better term, a list of demands or things that they would like to have in a green room or type of hotel stuff. And I mean, some of the stuff is ridiculous, the stuff that people want. And he was like, see that? He's like, people that do that, he's like, they have lost sight of what they're really doing. And the fact that they're probably not doing as well comedically as they would like to, like their act. So they find other things to blame. Like, well, I didn't have my champagne in the green room. That's why I think, you know, or this is going on, and I didn't have this. I couldn't sleep well because I wasn't in this hotel chain that I really like. He's like, they stop blaming other things and looking to find fulfillment in other things where they're just not really happy with what they're doing on stage anymore. And he's like, it's a reactionary thing that that people go through, and they just try to find other excuses as to why, you know, their act is stale. It's like, yeah, you're doing well financially. You might be popular, but at the end, we're all comics. And instead of going, you know what, I really need to write new jokes and try new shit, that they just start blaming everything else, and they start to treat people like shit, and they surround themselves with the wrong people. And so that was interesting to hear. I had never really heard that perspective before. I just thought it was a pure ego thing. But then when you hear this, the list of demands that people make, and then you associate the people and their act with that, and you go, oh man, that makes a lot of sense. But so he's seen it. So that was some really good perspective on that. So yeah, Friday rolls around, you know, showtime, both shows go well. I had a bunch of high school friends come out. That was fun. One night a bunch of guys came out and girls come out. We got just fucking hammered. We had a lot of shots and drinks, and you know, I had people actually come out and see two shows on, you know, different nights, and I really appreciate them spending $25 a pop to see me, and it really meant a lot. And shout out to the guys at the Comedy at the Carlson for having such a great club. It's a new club. If you're in Rochester or in the area, please go support that club. They get it over there. It's built for comics. It's just a beautiful room. The way they have it set up is great. And I think in the next year or two, man, that place is really going to blow up. They got a lot of great acts coming there. And I'm just very, I feel humbled and fortunate to be able to go and work that club at such an early stage in its existence. And to do it with Colin Quinn was unbelievable, man. And we did a podcast in between shows on Friday. That was fun. They have a great podcast studio in there. It's all set up. There's three mics there. They have a couch for the guests. And then they have, you know, the main guy has his station with a computer. Then we have the two co-hosts. And at each station, there's like a nice 1080p camera attached to it. They have a show producer. I mean, it's a well-run show that they have over there, the Carlson cast. I mean, they could produce a ton of podcasts out of there. They could start their own podcast network. I mean, it's like a legit studio. I mean, it's professionally done. It is great. So yeah, we did the podcast. I put that on my Facebook page. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. I was kind of half in the bag in between shows there. It gets a little weird with the conversation. We talk about grocery stores and just weird shit. But it was fun. And it's kind of a way to keep the juices going, because sometimes in between shows, the energy comes down and you got to kind of work yourself to get back up there again. But during the podcast in between, it kind of kept those juices flowing, so to speak. And it was a lot of fun. And the rest of the weekend was great. And again, friends came out. I got to have breakfast with Quinn again. Before I took off back home. And, you know, he was just saying, hey, man, I hate doing this kind of stuff. I never want it to seem like I'm bragging or you know, just trying to. But, you know, to have somebody like that go, hey, man, you're hilarious. I mean, you're a funny guy. He's just like, you can be great. He's like, you just got to come to New York, man. He's like, you know, you told me you got a couple other guys that told you that you should come to New York. And he's like, I agree. He's just like, you know, they already said they'll help you out. He's like, you got to get there. If you want to be great, you have to come to New York. He's like, because it'll knock all those rough edges off of you. And he's like, I think you'll do well there. So when I have guys like, you know, him and, you know, and other comics like, dude, you got to get here. You would do well. I mean, I think I have to listen, you know. And I really want to go there. But, I mean, just to be able to sit down for, I mean, the whole weekend, probably 8 or 9 hours of just him and I just talking comedy and people. You know, he met my dad, my sister. He was just a really nice guy, man. For someone to have accomplished as much as he has comedically, and to still be just a great guy. It's refreshing, and it just, I mean, he's been at it over 25 years, and he's still so excited. I mean, we talked about the excitement of having a new bit and how you just can't wait to get to a new show to try it again. I mean, I've worked with people who haven't been doing it half as long, and it's a fun job, but it can be just like any other thing after a while. And we all can get comfortable in it, and, you know, but it's one of those things when you got to constantly challenge yourself to get better and read and write stuff and try to keep yourself relevant. And I mean, it's a hard thing to do in this entertainment business, you know, but he's done it. So I have to take his advice. So it was just a great experience, man. So, I mean, I know I keep saying it, but it's a rare thing. And I'm very fortunate, blessed, or lucky to have had the opportunity to sit down. I mean, you know, it was 3 days in a row with this dude and just to talk comedy. You know, and to see somebody just still excited, you know, he still got that vigor. He talked about this dude's way he could have made it into the NBA. That's probably some of the funniest shit he talked about, is how good he was at basketball and how he peaked at 12. I mean, that's just some funny shit that he told me. And there's just all the great stories, you know, about Bobby Kelly and Chris Rock and Nick DiPaolo. Patrice, I mean, the stuff he said about Patrice, about being just so fucking mean and just, you know, how he was just never nice to anybody, but he was just such a brilliant comedian. And he showed a lot of respect to younger guys, you know, like the younger guys to him, like Mark Norman, Joe List, Sam Morril, about how those guys just really love comedy. It's just like you can tell he feels comfortable with leaving what him and his class have done for the New York comedy scene in the hands of the next generation. He's just like, those guys get it. He still loves comedy. He doesn't think that all these new comics suck. He feels like they're getting better. They have YouTube. They can watch all the greats. He's like, they can watch Carlin, you know, Pryor's, Kinison. He's like, they can watch all these late night monologues. He's like, all this comedy stuff, they can just take it all in and just learn. He's like, and you see it with some of these young guys, that they're students of the game, and they love comedy, and that makes them feel good. And if you're a younger comic, you got to do like Colin Quinn. That's not shitting on, you know, young comics. He gets that it changes. And as long as you show respect to the stage and to other comedians and those that came before you, I mean, he loves it. So, all right, this episode has been a little bit longer than normal. So there's a show. That's a show. I doubt it. But if anybody has any other questions about what it was, if, you know, specifically if he asked me anything or said anything, just feel free to find me on Facebook, or if you know me personally, just text me or email me like, hey, did he say anything about this? But no, he didn't shit on anybody, okay? That's not what he's about. But great experience. Shout out again to everybody at the Comedy at the Carlson, Mark Ippolito, Suresh, Todd Youngman, Jimmy LeChase, Vinny Paulino, and the wait staff was great. So please, if you're in Rochester, go check out that club. Go check it out. Go support it. They're giving away tickets for shows. Please, just go support it. Because I want to be headlining in that club in a couple years, and I want everybody to come out. It felt good. And thank you to all the people in Rochester that came out and talked to me after shows. And, you know, they're happy to see a hometown kid doing some things. I appreciate the support. I won't forget it. So when I come back in a couple years and I'm headlining, come out and see me again and tell me you saw me open for Quinn and you knew I was going to make it. And I'm glad that you guys enjoyed my comedy. It motivates me. And there's a show. That's a show. I'm out. Peace.